Welcome back. This is the Taylor Report. And as I said previously, we want to focus on this thing of who Trump is and how we got into this mess. Trump is really a part of the a true crisis of the American, in my opinion, capitalist order. There are two parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. They do not differ in any significant way on matters impacting on, say, Canada. If you read in the fine print of editorials, Canadian press, you'll notice that they remind readers that in terms of trade, it's very tricky to distinguish between Republican policy and Democrat policy in terms of what is best for Canada. So that's why we get the focus on personalities and personal conduct and how he looks, how he sounds, that kind of thing. But what happened here with the Republican Party, and there's some sign that the Democrat Party might have the same, some of the same issues, is actually the American public has been moving away from these two parties in terms of deep suspicion, unhappiness, lack of progress, and because they will not bring the kinds of reforms that the country needs. And so there's been in the case of the Democrats and Republicans, more and more noise, even within their ranks, about changing gears or changing direction. And in both cases, there's been a fight to hold on to basically American empire politics and bullying the world. If you recall, when Trump came on the scene, he is a classic, what they call outlier. And he actually organized a coup, a political coup in the Republican Party, in that he played the game and they permitted it, thinking they could beat him. And unfortunately for them, and not that I have any sympathy for them, but they thought, okay, he'll liven up he'll draw viewers because he's a TV personality. There's been analogies made. Mr. Berlusconi in Italy did the same thing to his ruling party for a while. Is that he was an outside personality at $1 billion, and people enjoyed watching him. Well, he got a hold of the reins of power for a while. In the case of Trump, they thought, well, okay, the Democrats thought he was no threat, that they could beat him. They thought it'd be a joke if the Republicans were to nominate him, they would crush him. Every American newspaper, think about it, every American newspaper of any note in 2016 opposed Trump and supported Hillary Clinton, and he won. So that's a societal crisis. It's a crisis of their ruling parties. They call them, you know, you got two. I don't think that's been talked about enough. The Republican Party didn't have a built-in insurance policy to guarantee that they would prevent an outlier from getting in. Actually, it was just their own dumb luck. They didn't have the wherewithal to defeat Trump for the nomination. The Democratic Party is actually a more organized and more democratic centralist operation. And I know people don't like to talk about it, but when Bernie Sanders in the Iowa primaries, Phil, do you know? I mean, does anybody ever know, even know whatever happened in Iowa when he was running for the? They thought he had a fire going and he was really going to take Iowa, and he apparently did, but they announced Buttigieg as the winner, and then they said, well, maybe not, but it was to this day the Democratic Party has not explained what the heck happened there.
One thing for sure is it took the wind out of Bernie's campaign, you know, which was the purpose of the whole thing.
Yeah, no, they stumbled him, yeah. And then they took care of it. So you have two parties who function this way and who keep their opposition, those who might represent some type of fundamental change, out of to one side. And even though he won the presidency, and Trump, he came in saying he was going to do some things that was certainly of interest to anti-war people and people who say that America's problem is regime change wars and diktat to other countries. He said that he was going to withdraw the troops from Afghanistan. He was going to withdraw the troops from Syria. He was going to end that war. Well, he didn't do it. Troops are still there. So we have this problem of continuity again, where, and if you recall, Obama, let's talk about him. He was going to, he said in the first 100 days, he guaranteed he's going to close Guantanamo. Guantanamo is still open. It's still there. So you want to ask, well, who actually has power? What is all this? Why do people basically fall for it? It's it is a Groundhog Day thing where you keep getting the same results no matter what picture you put up. You put up picture of Mr. Unifier, and then you have Mr. Divider, and it goes back. People, I will tell the old timers, I call them now that, George the First said that he wasn't going to be, imagine this, he was not going to be like Reagan. He would continue Reagan-like policies. But he said he was going to be kinder and gentler. And that was the expression, kinder and gentler. It always seems to be the same kind of word games. When they pass from one ruling class party to the other ruling class party, well, my friend, he was a little rough there. So he said, I'm going to be kinder and gentler. And then when it was Little Bush, and he was, people called him an idiot and a monster. I mean, people thought he was, should be laughed out of office because he was considered so stupid. And Cheney was so brutal. Now, he has his picture taken with Michelle Obama, and she says, I love him. I love this man. And you say, wow, it's kind of like being in the old days at a movie, and you say, this is where I came in. And in the case of Obama, as I said, he was Mr. I don't do stupid things, and he was going to unify everybody, and he got the Nobel Prize. Then we went back to Mr. Bad Guy, to be replaced now by Mr. Good Guy. This is why the American public is roiling, I think that's the word, and they're very uncomfortable with, they're going to be very uncomfortable with what they inherit here. On the matter of Canada being, unfortunately, you have to face it, we use the term middle power. It's not a sign of any power at all, actually, but it's called middle power. I think that somehow it's kind of like being a middleweight championship. Well, it's pretty tough middleweight, but actually not at all. I mean, this is a yes, sir, an aye, sir, state. And examples being these. I mean, let's talk about the Meng case and the Iran airliner matter. In the case of the airliner, which is very much in the headlines, here is Trump at the moment. Everyone's saying he's got to be chased out of office with rocks and sticks, got to be arrested. He's plainly not all there, that kind of stuff. And that's been the consensus since he took office. Okay. Well, Canada arrested Meng Wanzhou because he said, I want her arrested. So why? The question, that's a question that nobody see. We all look the other way. Trump decided to destroy Canada's multilateral trade policy which was going to lead to real benefit to Canada, to get into major heavy free trade arrangement with a rapidly developing major world economy. Not only them, but primarily. And he, the President of the United States, decided on a policy which he knew anybody saying knows was going to destroy Canada's multilateral trade policy. Because when he said arrest Meng Wanzhou, and he certainly didn't hide the fact that he had his fingers in that pie and he was involved, because he said for the world to anyone who was listening, publicly said, if I think it'll help get a deal, I will I will drop the charge against Meng Wanzhou, which means if you have a justice system, the judge is supposed to say, and the attorney general is supposed to say, throw the case out. The man has just politicized it beyond belief. But that would be if you were interested in Canada's economic development or the idea of a multilateral trade policy. Instead, Canada stood silent while Trump wrecked the relations with a major Chinese company. He wrecked it. And the prime minister did what he was told to do by the maniac, by this irrational president. And by the way, had he said no, the Democrats wouldn't have run to the side of Prime Minister Trudeau. Had Trudeau said, oh, I'm not going to do that because it will hurt us, and I protect Canada's interests. Had he said that, the Democrats would have turned on him. The United States Congress would have turned against Trudeau. He knew that. He's going to have to do what the executive of the American government tells him to do. There may be under Biden a new arrangement, but it'll be whatever Biden wants. So if it benefits Biden, he will decide a different path with Meng Wanzhou, but it will not be decided in Canada. And a detail that we've left out, and this is the Taylor Report, CIT, 89.5 FM. We left out our discussion of this, Prime Minister Trudeau was aware, it's in the Globe and Mail, that he in an interview, he said he knew in time preceding the arrest that this was going to happen. Since he knew that he was going to arrest an executive of a major company on behalf of the Americans, he would know, his closest three or four men sitting around with their feet on his desk would say, you know that what's going to happen, they're going to arrest one of our guys. Somebody's going to get picked up. And so to later say, oh my goodness, the Chinese have done something. Well, you pay people big bucks to tell you that's going to happen, and they knew it was going to happen, but they went ahead anyhow. So, but now we've shifted the ground. So at any rate, the point is that Canada was obedient to the man that everybody now says should have never been in office and should be in jail. But Canada took his orders and didn't ask for a tip, as far as I can see. On the matter of the Iranian airliner, Trump, and I would say to the guys who run Twitter, Trump assassinated an Iranian political military leader in Baghdad who was on a peace mission at the invitation of the prime minister of Iraq to engage with the government of Saudi Arabia to bring about a peaceful resolution of major differences if they could. He was in Iraq on invitation. He was assassinated by the President of the United States, and the President of the United States talked about that on Twitter. He was proud of himself, and nobody said, hey, you know, that kind of stuff shouldn't be there. That's celebrating violence. It's violating international law, blah, blah. Nothing happened. Canada, and now in terms of Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada says he's not happy with Iran because, you see, an airliner was shot down, an Iranian airliner with civilians aboard, an ugly, terrible tragedy. And he says he wants answers from Iran. And I guess this is news. We like to report on the Tater Report. There, a statement was issued by four governments yesterday, saying, day before yesterday, saying that they want Iran to be answerable for what it did by, for this airliner. And the four are, I'm going to call them the Four Eyes. The fifth was missing. New Zealand didn't sign it, but Four Eyes signed this thing condemning Iran. Nowhere is the, does anybody have the guts, political guts and honesty with the Canadian people to mention what they all know, which is that the assassination of the Iranian leader created a war, potential war outbreak, and everybody went on a war footing. And as a result of the anticipated engagement of American military with the Iranian military, that airliner was shot down. A prominent Canadian businessman, very well known, issued a statement which should have been the voice of all Canadians. He said it was the crazy behavior of the American president murdering the Iranian leader that caused this disaster. Now, that is not in the Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, and CBC. They're not treating it. It is forgotten that he said it because that's the wrong message, you see. We have to do what the crazy man, he caused the problem, and we have to stay on his side of the game and put responsibility on the Islamic Republic. Together with illegal sanctions and every kind of means to try to harm that government, which is in, again, I said before, the United Nations has made no such statement. The United Nations does not regard the Islamic Republic as the principal aggressor in the area. The United Nations, actually as high up as the Secretary General, spoke against against leaders of states murdering each other. It's, this is a kind of feudal situation when a leader of a major power brags that he murdered people. So that's the crisis, is our crisis. The Canada will not find its voice, will not take an independent position, but will continue to follow what the dictate. Whichever, the ruling of the two ruling parties of America say. That's the truth of how this thing functions. I remind you, this is the Tater Report. It is CIUT 89.5. I do urge people, Jammu Barak is a very good leader. He's the kind of leader that America needs. I was glad he ran for the Green Party. I'm sorry he wasn't a candidate in 2020. I think the Gray Zone has been doing an excellent job. People called the Canada Files have been doing a good job. Ben Norton has been very sharp. Maybe you could help me out, Phil. How much time have we got on this?
We have about 10 minutes or so.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, let's talk. We may as well talk about what happened in Washington. I don't know. I assume you followed it closely. As a matter of fact, I would say to anybody, don't lie to me. Everybody's watching this. the question, objective question, should be who is in charge of security? It's been pointed out when Black Lives Matter went to Washington, they met the American Army. this was not a secret. Phil, leading up to this, the when they were collecting the Electoral College votes in the various states, a lot of those states did not even kept secret where the vote taking was collecting was taking place, because they did not want, you know, ugly attacks by anticipated Trump enthusiasts. So they knew that in each state that there was a potential problem. Clearly, they knew in Washington that there would be a crowd. Of course, people have a right to assemble and they have a right to speech, and those rights have to be protected. It is a crime to incite a crowd to violence. Looking at Trump's words, I don't think you could make a legal case that he did it. It's clear that his behavior contributed to what they, in his words, did contribute. But if it is a crime, go ahead and prosecute. But what we're getting is political actions, which are not very well grounded. This is not, in fact, new in American history. It may be in the halls of Congress, but there have been plenty of instances of public buildings attacked, burned down, people killed, etc. My understanding is that the responsibility for the the grounds of Congress, physical area, is that of Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House. And there is supposedly a mechanism that if the Capitol Police cannot handle a situation, then of course they all have the power to turn to National Guard or Associated Police. Clearly that would be a plan that would be in place. You can't say, oh, well, we called them and they didn't come. Well,
if I can just interject, that plan was in place, and the governor of Maryland says that he had authorized and collected his National Guard, and they were prepared. And he said he has a unit within his National Guard who were especially trained at protecting government buildings, and they offered them to the U.S. Defense Department, and the U.S. Defense Department told him, we don't need you, thank you very much. And of course, you know, to get from Maryland to the Capitol is a matter of minutes. And so there's that question. Did somebody, happy that this happened? Did somebody want this to happen?
You know? Well, you point to, this is one of those floating facts among many. I want to hear these authorities discuss with each other who permitted this situation to get out of hand. What you say there may or may not bear on it. That's one guy's testimony. So, okay, so what does the other party say? You have to remember, you don't get to tell it from one point of view. Somebody's going to have to account for why Congress was not properly protected. And there was, they say there were four deaths. And at one point they said five, but now they seem to agree four. I have not seen actually an account of the three. So what was the cause of death? Was it trauma to, you know, blows to the head, body, or was it physical? Do you know the answer, Phil?
The last I saw, they were saying five.
I'm not talking about the numbers. I'm talking about what happened to the...
Well, the woman from California was shot by police. That it seems to be a consensus. The policeman who died, there's a lot of fog around the circumstances under how he died.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Right? That's my point, that, you know, here we are with a world capturing major event in a major capital of the world with highly sophisticated police media. And they like to say the numbers of dead people. That's okay. But a number doesn't tell anybody very much about what happened. In the case of the woman who was shot, I urge people, go to the Washington Post. They actually, the Washington Post makes a video available if you want to see a shot. I watched it. I don't ordinarily like to look at those things, but I, since there's going to be a dispute about every blasted detail. And she was an Air Force veteran, had been to Iraq and to Afghanistan. There was someone inside the door, a door, with pointed a gun at her, and she didn't know the gun being pointed at her. Somebody near her said, there's a, somebody with a gun. And her friends boosted her up to try to put her through a window, and the shot was fired. I didn't hear anybody say, we're warning you, we will open fire if you violate this spot. But anyway, that's one of those things that somebody better account for. I guess we should pause. Let's do this thing of Twitter should not be determining speech. People are saying, well, you know, they don't like Trump, so they want him taken down. That's just pure irrational vengeance. That this Twitter has been taking people down for some time now. Leaders around the world who have Twitter accounts periodically have their account taken down. That is not useful, particularly if it's a foreign leader, because, you know, there is alienation. People say, oh, he's an Iranian, they're all this, or he's a Chechen, they're all this. Well, yeah, but if it's a leader, I really don't care too much about anybody's opinion. I simply want to know what he's saying or she is saying. But we seem to have gone past that now, where people don't want to hear, they want to be protected. And if that's your zone that you're comfortable with, you're in bad shape. You just simply are anxious to be led. That is not going to help us effectuate progress in the world if all you want to do is obey. And speech, allegedly, according to all the great advocates of free speech, is the best way to sort out differences. You can regulate violence, but speech ought to be, you know, broadly interpreted. And people who consider themselves on the left should be fighting for this. I don't see that very much. I see it from Jammu Baraka, Ben Norton, et cetera, but not from liberal quarters. AOC is all for getting Trump. Well, I would say to her, look, if you're a congresswoman, bring a, you know, pass a law. But asking a private outfit to do your work for you is shows that you're working for them and not them for you. So, again, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'll ask you, Phil, if you have enough rough idea of the time remaining.
Well, I think we're close to the end, but I think you might have some other points to make on that. So I think we have another minute. So let's
another take a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would listen. Everybody, watch the movie Dr. Strangelove. Watch the movie Citizen Kane. And if you want to know how Citizen Kane was made, watch the movie Mank. It's not absolutely accurate, but it's a very important film. Be reminded that if you, the problem of people who want to change parties, that is, improve parties, like Bernie was an independent socialist and became a Democrat. Hillary always said he's not a Democrat. She's right about that. He wanted to see if he could move in and change the Democratic Party. This is a problem. And we will address it in future shows. But Jammu Baraka has been, at least he went with the Green Party and said, okay, I can say what I think. But I don't know that that's the answer either. But that's certainly where we are. We have Groundhog Day in America, where the parties take turns being Mr. Bad Guy, Mr. Good Guy. And everybody else is Mr. Sucker. Okay, it's a Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. Thank you for listening. Take care. See you next week.